We are towards the top of Tet Vav Amud Aleph, about six lines down. V'Hanashim Bechalal HaNezek. Before we do that, I think we just left off briefly by talking. I think this is maybe something that actually is my introductory comments. I think link what we spoke about last time and at the beginning of this time. So we ended up talking a little bit last time about kosher witnesses, right? What counts as and we talked about the exclusion of avadim and of non-Jews as well, of nochrim as well. Specifically, we have in the area of nezikin that the Gemara had to sort of go out of its way almost to exclude them specifically as kosher witnesses. And we got into a bit of a discussion at the end about basically how that works in practice. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the beginning of the Gemara that we're going to discuss. Is also talking about the obligation of women with regards to Nezek as well. And I just think it was important, or from my mind when I was thinking about this, I think it's important to preface by saying that I don't think we have all the answers when we're going to go through this, but I personally sort of don't like getting into apologetics or anything like that, and I don't believe in them. But I think that what's important is to come from the perspective of recognizing that when we're dealing with these sorts of areas, it doesn't always match up with exactly the way that we view life in the 21st century per se, or the way that we personally, as individuals, do. But we're coming, obviously, from a perspective that we believe the Torah to be God-given, and Torah Sheba'al Peh being linked to that as well, obviously. Torah Sheba'al Peh also given together with the written Torah at Mount Sinai. And it's in a sense sort of for us to try and figure out how exactly this works, how it doesn't. Sometimes we have questions which we don't have answers to, and sometimes we don't, and sometimes we do. We come up with good answers that sort of make us happy. But I just think it's important to sort of preface by saying that obviously we're not coming from a perspective, or personally I'm not coming from a perspective of in a sense trying to. I think the point is that the perspective is trying to learn something from the wisdom rather than trying to sort of fit the wisdom into what we already believe to be the case. So in terms of we'll start off with just where we left off last week, which is in terms of the witnesses. So we're only talking in that case about two kosher witnesses. So you have two kosher witnesses. It's quite unusual. Two kosher witnesses in a case. And again, kosher witnesses doesn't just simply mean any old man. I think someone mentioned last week, there are many things that make you a non-kosher witness, untrustworthy person, or whatever it is. Talking about kosher witnesses who clearly are trustworthy people, who are keeping, all of the basic rules that they should be with, where they can. Obviously, everyone makes mistakes. And in that specific case, you have two kosher witnesses who are very clearly in agreement on one specific thing, that would be taken as fact. But short of that, there are many cases in which we'll take all sorts of testimony to try and understand the truth. So I found in the back very interesting Trumas Hadeshen, who says the following, that actually learns from this Gemara, and from the Rambam based on this Gemara, the way that the Gemara goes out of its way to try over here to say that that Eved Va'akum are specifically excluded in a sense from being witnesses in this types of case, he says, is something which shows us that in a sense the natural logic would have been otherwise. And the reason for this, he says, is he says that basically, if this wasn't the case, then what we would be setting up is a case where people would be it would be much easier for thieves to sort of pay someone off in the realm of Nezek and say, and this, let's say, slave, for instance, is paid off, is given great pressure by someone to come and say, this is what happened, that's what happened. And in that case, that obviously would cause great harm. So in order to avoid that, they're specifically excluded from over here. But what he says from here, we see, in a sense, that the natural logic is that in any other case, whether the kosher witness or non-kosher witness, if there is someone who you think, the Beis Din thinks will have a much better perspective on this, then they'll listen very, very, very carefully to what the person has to say. So he brings the following case, very interesting case. He says, if you have a, it's a great case because let's put it like this. I only hear of these things the other way around. So he says, they don't actually quote the exact case over here. But in the Chuvah Sadeshan, this is in Chuvah Shin Nun Gimel, the second last one that he does, 353. He has 354 chuvas, which is the gematria deshen, terumat hadeshen. So in the very last one, he brings a case of two women who were fighting over which was their makam kavur, which was their seat in shul. Right, this one says it's my seat, and this one says it's my seat. Right, and one says I have witnesses that this is my seat, and the other one says, well, I have witnesses my seat. So in one case, the one person is bringing. Women who are witnesses that it's their seat, and the other one brings a man who says it's a witness that it's their seat. So he says, oh, maybe you should say, you know, because it's a Jewish man, so maybe that's preferable. He says, no, absolutely not. He says the talking about the women's section, which one's more like, who's more likely to know what's going on over there, right? So he says, much more likely that the women are going to know what's going on over there. So I thought it was a very funny case, because I've never heard, I mean, maybe it's just because I don't sit there, but I always hear, not always, but no, certainly not in Pinna, but in other communities, I've heard men squabble over who sits where, but I don't often hear that. Yeah, what were you saying?
They each come every other week.
Right, maybe they, yeah, exactly. And this happened, yeah, their scheduling got messed up. Their scheduling got messed up. Exactly. So anyway, but that was fascinating. So this is 100, this is when there was Chumash Adeshin, I think it was in the 1700s maybe even earlier. Oh no, Chumash Adeshin is even earlier, I think. Anyway, but clearly for a long time, people have been fighting over seats and shul. And the point over here was very interesting, because it almost turned the Gemara on its head. What it's saying over here is that, in a sense, this is the exception to the rule, and therefore, the exception that proves the rule, and therefore, whenever we're talking about cases where there's going to be people around, you know, you're going to take the natural logical people who were there in the absence of fact, effectively, yeah, in the absence of obvious fact. Okay, so that was a little bit of leftover of last week, and again we move into something which is difficult to sort of, not difficult, but something which doesn't automatically match up with the classical 21st century approach. But again, that doesn't bother us too much. We'll try and figure out this Gemara, and then obviously all questions are welcome, and we'll try and make sure that we come fully to grips with it. And then the following, so the first talk is about, as I said, women in Nezek, and if we finish that, I don't know if we'll get through it, but if we do finish that, then we go on to a very, very interesting discussion of Chatzi Nezek, which is something which we've sort of been skirting around for a while, and then we get a little bit more into the details of that afterwards. Okay, v'hanashim b'chlal ha-nezek, and so women are included within the realms of damages. Minohani mili, where do we learn this from? So we're going to bring three different proofs for this. Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. So the first one is as follows: V'chein tana d'bei Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rav, basing it on the study house of Rabbi Yishmael. Omer kra. Ish o isha ki ya'asu mikol chatos. Right, so he quotes this pasuk from the beginning of Bamidbar, and I think it actually might be Parashas Tzav, second parasha, and he says clearly that's including a man and a woman with regards to all sins. This is talking about bringing a korban chatos, right, with regards to bringing a sin offering, right? Clearly they are all, they're considered to be liable for misdemeanors, for things we've done wrong. Hishva hakosav ish leisha lechol onshin sheva Torah. Clearly the Torah equates men and women with regards to, not equates, but clearly they are falling into the same, they're subject to the same requirements when it comes to punishments from the Torah, from doing things wrong. And therefore, we're going to say the same thing over here, right? Clearly, this is something which a person has done wrong. Nezek, person has caused damage, even if it was inadvertently, it was something which is not correct to do. And therefore, that's proof. That's proof number one. Okay, so proof number one is, as I say, when we're talking about doing things wrong. And actually, obviously, the premise of this is linked to the idea of there are certain exemptions which get a lot of press with regards to women, and generally they tend to be in the realm of what we call mitzvot aseh. Here we're talking about in the realm of mitzvot lot aseh, right? Things you're not allowed to do. And there are actually very, very few of them. There are more exceptions than there are, more exceptions to the rule than there are a number of the rules. I mean, so for instance, things like lulav is one. Is there not an exception to the rule? Tefillin, tzitzis, those sorts of things. But I think there's only about five or six when you add them all up. There's only about five or six mitzvot that women are actually exempt from in this particular area. Anyway, so that's proof number one. Okay, so that's proof number one. Second one is as follows. Debay Rabbi Elezer. Debay Rabbi Elezer, Tana as follows. Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem, hishva ha-kosov ish... Isha le'ish lechol dinim shebatora. So one, the first realm was in the realm of lo ta'aseh, misdemeanors, doing things wrong. In this case, we're talking about ve'ilam mishpatim, that the Torah is clearly equating lifnehem, right? Lifnehem in the plural, referring to everybody. So that's and the Ve'ilah HaMishpatim is clearly talking in the realm of dinim. Dinim means not necessarily doing things wrong, it's talking in the realm of monetary areas, right? In financial areas, what we call dinei momenus in halacha. So that's the second proof that clearly we're including a much broader category in that regard. And therefore, that's proof number two. L'chol dinim shabbatar. Debei Chizkia v'Rabbi Yosi Haglili. Now we have the third suggestion. Tana Omar. Sorry, but yeah, they taught as follows. Omar kra v'hemis ish o isha. There we're talking about in the case of murder or even accidental death. I think. Oh no, sorry. It's the opposite. They were talking about them being killed. We're talking about an animal. Let's say my animal kills a human being. So in that case, then that's a very significant thing. And there we're equating or falling into the same category, men and women. Hishva because of isha le ish lechol misos shebatar. We're talking about death penalties and losing of a life. There's also an equation drawn over there, and therefore that's another possible proof for v'hanoshim bichlal hanezek then be included in all these areas of damages. Do we really need all three? Right? Why do we have three different sources for this? Diashmin and Kamaisas. We're going to show that each one has its obviously, as we often do, each one has its lacking. There's sort of like a little hole that needs to be plugged by the different sources. So we'll have some of them will be missing elements, and therefore once we've got all three together, we're going to include in a very very in the broadest sense possible. It's Richard the Yashmin and Kamaisa. If we would have just had the first proof, i.e., we're talking about Mikol Chatos. Mikol Chatos. I can't remember the next word because it's not Mikol Chatos HaAdom. Not included in the Gemara. So if we just have that one talking about the sin offering the sins, then the Yashmin and Kamaisa Hosam Hu Dechos Rachmona Allah. Maybe in that case, you know, the Torah said, okay, yeah, but, well, of course we're going to be paying back. Of course we're going to be liable when it comes to damages done to a woman. Why? Because that's the way to get a kapara, right? That's the way, in a sense, to make up for what one has done. If you're going to be punishing someone, then you also have to be allowing them to make up for what they've done, right? If you're going to say you're going to be liable for it, then you have to give them the option to do a proper tshuva, and part of the proper tshuva is trying to make reparations for what you've done wrong, for this damages that you've caused, and therefore they're going to be included in that. But you might have limited it only to that. You might have said, if you'd only had one source, we might have said that's the only source, that's the only area in which we're going to be doing that. Aval dinim, maybe in other monetary areas, then ish dvar maso umatan, who classically, the man was the one who's involved, let's say, in business, in bigger business, and therefore... maybe that's where we would apply the laws would only apply to a man in that case. In isha de lavbas... Ishalo, right? But a woman might not have been included in those sorts of areas. Ve'i ashma inan dinim. And if we would have had just the second case, which is talking about more general monetary areas, right? Like you said, masa umatan, business type things, contracts, all those sorts of things. More the realm of bava matzia than the realm of bava kama. Then maybe that's so kihechidet yavila. Then the right. In that case, we're talking about a livelihood, right? There we're talking about a livelihood. So that's why, in a sense, we might have thought that that was limited to that area because specifically talking about a livelihood. Aval kapara ish de bar mitzvah in isha de lav bas mitzvah lo. So however, in the realm, you might have, it's interesting, it sort of flips it around. But basically, we're saying yes, but in the realm of kapara, of atonement, then it wouldn't have been so necessary. Why wouldn't it have been so necessary? Because anyway, there's less liability, right? Less liability, in a sense, less requirement, less responsibility, less liability, because in total number, technical, you know, the sort of technical number of required mitzvahs, required commandments is lower for a woman. So maybe there would have been more, I don't know, more leniency or something with regards to atonement. The point is, there wouldn't have been the same requirement for atonement, and therefore you might have distinguished. And again, we have both of these. It's clear that that's not the case, and we do have this broader category. We still have the third proof to try and fit in. The I Ashmainan Hani Tarta, we're basically just over halfway down the Omud. The I Ashmainan Hani Tarta, and if we would have had these two proofs, the first two, Hochamishim Kapara, Hochamishim Chiyusa, the first one with regards to atonement, the second one with regards to livelihood, talking about monetary, you know, sustenance and keeping a person going, then we might have limited it to those areas. Well, Inyan Katola, Ish de Bar Mitzvah, Lashalem Kofer, Isha, Lo, you might have thought that because, again, we have a higher, potentially a higher penalty, or you might have distinguished between the penalty with regards to the death penalty, not the death penalty, with regards to death, accidental death of a person, the double payment, a kofar is a sort of a double payment, a knas on top, the penalty payment that goes over and above the actual damage that was done. So you might have distinguished between those two. Right, because of this higher expectation of commandments, Ish de bar mitzvah l'shalem kofar ishalo, but iashmein on kofar mishum deika ibud neshama. Right, when we're talking about kofar, okay, it's very good because of the double penalty payment. So I understand why we would have included that. Aval mishum deika ibud neshama. But there you're talking about losing a life. So in a sense, again, we flipped it around once more. If we would have had only the last source, so maybe we would have said, yeah, because of loss of life. That's why we're taking it so seriously. And then Aval Hani Tarate, but the first two cases that we suggested beforehand, maybe we wouldn't have included them. Deleka ibud neshama, because there's no loss of life. Ema lo tzricha. So therefore, we would have potentially thought that in theory you could have limited each one. We have all three exceptions, or not exceptions. We have all three sources, and therefore we have this very, very broad category. Any type of damage, contract, whatever it is, business deal, you know, anything that's going to based in is going to be, as we say, v'hanoshim v'plan hanezek. We're going to include women and men in the same type of way, in terms of liability, in terms of repayment, all these sorts of things are going to be exactly the same, and that's the conclusion of our Gemara. We had all the three different sources, and as we said, we saw the sort of different types of exceptions between each one.
This is incredibly
forward-looking,
actually.
So the truth is that, yeah, I mean,
it's just turned out that way, but I mean.
No, it's, I always feel like the, obviously, again, I'm a big believer that the Torah is right, but there was a time, yes, it's funny, now the Torah is looked at, so sort of certain laws in the Torah looked at as sort of crazy right wing, but once upon a time, they looked at as crazy left wing. In a sense, it hasn't changed, it's everything else that's sort of shifted over, so you're right, yes, at a certain time, it was mad, and in fact, if you look at ancient texts, you know, nowadays we look at let's say Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov and Sarah Rivka Rachel and all these sorts of things, and sometimes we can see, sometimes from our perspective we look at it and we see almost not a preference, but almost like, let's say, Avraham gets more airtime than Sarah. So some people sort of say, yeah. Okay, if you look at ancient texts from that thing, women didn't exist at all, right? It's like, you know, the fact that, let's say, Avraham is proven, in fact, you have many, many cases. Avraham is proven wrong by Sarah, Yitzchak is proven wrong by Rivka, you know, like all these sorts of cases, Yehuda proven wrong by Tamar, you know, like so many times. So it's just interesting. Yeah, like you say, the different centuries have sort of viewed it in different ways, but I think that's why we try to maintain it as our constant. Torah was sort of guiding us, and as I say, I don't mean to say that there's no good questions. Sometimes there are things that don't always sit so well with us, but it's more for us to figure out, you know, for us to sort of try and figure that out. It's a very interesting, very good point. Yes, at the time that was a very big, very big chiddush. Something it was very unusual in those times. Yes. Okay. So we'll move on to Chatzi Nezek. Okay, we're not going to get into the details of the sources for it. That's going to come, I think, in the next daf or two. Where is the source? I think the source for Chatzi Nezek is not until Tes Zion, I think. Maybe even later. Okay, it's a little bit later. But over here we do talk about what exactly is, what it is. Okay, let's get into it. It's easier to explain once we're into the Gemara. Okay, so we're now just over halfway down, Tet Vav Amud Aleph. Okay, perfect time. We're just about to start a new part. Just about to start a new section. Hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin. Okay, so we just a reminder that the Mishnah had sort of thrown out a number of cryptic statements, very very brief statements, and one of the last ones was v'hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin. Okay, which we don't know what that means. V'hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin just means, was the last one. V'hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin means they join together in repayments. What does that mean? They join together. So what it's referring to is as follows. It's referring to a case of chatzi nezek, because there are some times where neither party's happy, right? Neither party is happy because the mazik feels that they've paid more than they should have done, and the nizek feels they've received back less than they should have done. Or not neither party is happy, but the point is they've both suffered a loss as a result of this damage that has happened. Okay, they've both suffered a loss. So what is that? We're talking about a case, Itmar Palganiska. When we talk about Chatzi Nezek, so classically, there are other cases of Chatzi Nezek, but the classic case of Chatzi Nezek that we're dealing with now is, of course, what we call a Shor Tam, right? Shor Tam, animal that's never gored before, and what's the logic behind that? What exactly is going on? So Rav Papa, we have a machlok is between Rav Papa and Rav Yehoshua. Rav Papa says the logic is as follows. Omar Mamona, he says, Palganizka, the chatzi nezek that you are paying back is a mamon payment. What that means is you are paying back for what you have done wrong, right? You have done something wrong, and therefore you're paying it back. And actually, you get a break. You get a break. What does that mean? You get a break. It means that chatzi nezek means you should be paying the whole thing, and in fact, you're getting a reduction, right? You're getting a reduction in your cost, but the cost that you are paying back is the damage that you've done, right? So that is the damage that you've done. You've done damage, and therefore you need to pay back. You're not paying back the full thing. You're getting away with it. Not getting away with it, but you're getting a bit lucky that you're only paying back half. Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yeshua flips it on his head. Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yeshua says as follows. Omar Knasa. He says, no, what do you mean Knasa? He said, what do you mean it's Mamona? It's a Knas. It's a penalty payment. He said, really, you should be paying nothing. He said, the Mazik should be paying zero. And actually, over here, you've got a penalty payment, right? In terms of pure logic, but sort of pure what one might have expected is that you'd be paid back nothing, right? It wasn't expected. This animal's never done anything like that before. Most of the time, the cows are very happily roaming through the marketplace and not damaging any humans, right? We walk along. I mean, nowadays, we don't walk along the streets. Once upon a time, you walk along the streets with your cow, and no one gets damaged. And all of a sudden, today, it went a bit crazy and caused damage. So that's caused nezek type. Sorry, caused Karen type damage. I intentionally cause damage. I'm not talking about where it eats some food or it tramples on something as it's walking. That's normal. That's Shane and Regel, which we've talked about. But Karen type damage, right? It went for something. You know, it specifically decided to, I don't know, charge at your front door or whatever it was. So in that case, again, what Rav Huna Bereda Rav Yeshua is saying, you shouldn't have paid anything. And over here we have a knas. You've been given a fine. You've been given a fine, and therefore we've sort of taken it up to half. So you have these two perspectives. Should have paid the whole thing. It's almost like I think one of my teachers used to refer to it as 1 minus or 0 plus, right? It's 1 minus 0 plus. That's basically what the two different ways of looking at it. Rav Papa Omar. Mamona, and we're gonna go through a few differences between the two. Rav Papa Omar Mamona, so he says as follows: Kosovar Stam Shavarim Lav Bechezkas Shimur Kaimon. He says the reason he views it as Mamona is because regular ox is not Bechezkas Shimur, and you're not watching it. Over dinhu deboi lishlemei kule. Really, you should have paid the entire amount. You should have been paying full damages. V'rachmona hu dechos ole. And the Torah has had mercy on you, right? It's sort of given you a break. You're paying, as we said, one minus. You're getting away with half. Really, you should have paid the entire amount. Da'akati lo ayid. Excuse me, Ture, because his shor, this animal, has never shown that it was that way inclined, that it should be causing this damage, and therefore we're giving you a little bit of a break. Really, you should have paid the whole thing. Verav Huna Bereder of Yeshua Omar Knossa Kosovar, he says as follows: Stam Shavarim Bechezkas Shimur Kaimi. He says no, the opposite. He says, you know, usually a shor is well guarded. Doesn't mean guarded by you. It means it's considered to be well guarded, and therefore you should have paid nothing, right? You should have paid nothing. Over dinu delo leshalem klal. We'd have expected you to have zero payment. Barachmanahu de kansei. The Torah has given you a little bit of a penalty payment, a half penalty payment. Kihechi delintere leture, because you should have watched it a little bit better. Okay? You should have watched it a little bit better, and therefore it's given you this sort of half penalty payment. So again, we see what's the difference between the two. So we're going to go through a few differences between the two. But one of them, do we get into it over here? Oh, we don't really get into it over here, but we talked about before. We talked about on Yud Dalad Amud Bet, the end of last time. We talked about the concept of what we call Moda Biknas Potter, right? Moda Biknas Potter basically means that there are two different categories, like you say over here, but generally there are two different categories of payment when it comes to paying for damages or for all sorts of things. In some instances, you are paying back what you stole or what you damaged or whatever it might be, right? You're paying back what is expected to be paid back, and in other cases, you're getting a fine. Right, you're getting a fine. So in the case of a moda, in the case of a fine, when you get a fine, if you admit to the fine, then you're going to pay back. Then you don't need to pay it back, right? If you admit to what you did, and without the bet din having to chase you and bring witnesses and all that sort of stuff, then you're going to get off it. It's a little bit similar. It's not exactly the same, but it's a little bit similar to, you know, when you get the parking fines and they say to you, if you don't want to fight it, then you can pay this amount. And if you don't pay within a certain time, then basically it's going to go up. Everyone's seen that? I don't know. Maybe we're the only people who get parking fines. But so it's a little bit similar to that. So this concept of moda b'kanas. So we spoke about moda b'kanas last time, and va'achar kach ba'u edim. What about if witnesses come afterwards and say, actually, you did it? But in this case, very interesting question, right? Are we going to say the same thing over here? Let's say my ox damages damages your door or something, and there are no witnesses, and I come along and I say, I'm really sorry, right? I'm really sorry this happened. So what does that mean? So does that means you're no longer liable? Right, it means you're no longer liable. You don't have to pay anything, right? Because it's moda b'kanas, or at least according to Rav Huna Bereder of Yeshua. Yeah, according to Rav Huna Bereder of Yeshua, in theory, you should pay nothing. According to Rav Papa, the first opinion, he said it's mamona. He says you are liable. He says you're getting a break here, right? You should have paid the whole thing. So even if you do admit to it, you're still going to have to pay. You're still going to have to pay half. So interesting whether this. Simply this should fall into the same category, right? It should fall into the same. The same category as that did. But anyway, okay. Yes.
A very practical question. I can't really imagine an individual being able to control an ox under any circumstances. The ox must do something. There's no way you can actually control it. So how can you blame somebody for your ox doing that? I'm just thinking of the practicality.
Well, you don't. The way you control it is by not putting it with other people, meaning don't bring it into the street or something. You have to
move it. A to B, then you can't help it. You've actually got to do something. In other words, one can't say that I just have a vision of going from one field to another field, and you go past it in another way that the ox does something.
Right.
Physically, you can't control the ox.
Yeah, I mean, I'm potentially so.
There is,
I don't want to misremember this, but I have a feeling there's an opinion later on that talks about in Shmira Ela Basakin, that the only way to control an animal, such as an ox, is with a knife, right? I.e., to kill the animal. Yeah, if you get rid of your animal, then that's the way you control the animal. So that reminds me of what you're saying. I think that's what he says. But the point is, maybe that's true, but in a sense, so that's why either don't do that or do it in a different place, make sure there's no people around, or the Torah is saying maybe that's why it's giving you a break, right? Maybe that's what Rav Papa's saying also, right? That in a sense what the reason why that's the case is because it's very, very difficult. I'm not sure that's true actually. Sorry, I take back my statement. I don't think the Torah is talking about giving you a break because it's difficult to control. It's saying because it's unexpected. That's what it's saying. It's not the same thing. Once it's unexpected. Yeah, but yeah, it's true, you can't control, but you can control. You control, you're putting it there, that's the point. You're taking it from one place to another. That's the control. Yeah. I think that's the point.
What would be interesting is if a third party actually calls a stampede or something like that.
Right.
There's a liability shift to the
person. Yeah. You mean if they egg on the animal.
Yeah, exactly.
They egg on the animal.
Right.
Logically, you'd expect that to be the case. I'm just trying to think if there's a Gemara. To goad the animal. I don't know. Yeah, but let's see. We'll try. Oh, let me write that down. So look up. I wonder if the Gemara deals with a case where a person goads the animal first, or someone else is sort of doing something to. Okay, I wonder. It's an interesting question. Okay. Fine. So we talked a little bit about Moda B'Kanas. So what I wanted to look up from here, actually, the reason why I brought these Svarim, but then I couldn't find it, is because of this idea of Moda B'Kanas. I think it's early on. Anyway, so what I brought today is what's called a Ketzos HaChoshen. Ketzos HaChoshen is a lot of sort of later commentary, 18th century commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. But specifically on the area of Choshen Mishpat. Okay, so Choshen Mishpat is the Ketzos HaChoshen. He has a very, in this particular, he's got all sorts of amazing stuff, but in this particular area, he's got a very big kiddush which I think everybody disagrees with, and I couldn't find it. I thought I had the source for it. But what he says, yeah. So it's an amazing thing to. We should start to try and find some more things from in here as we go through this. But what he says is basically when we talk about moda b'knas, the fact that you admit something then is going to be liable. He says that depends on each beit din. So it's each beit din it applies to. So basically, if I steal, right? I steal from you I steal something from you, and I can't, and really I'm a ganav, right? Ganav pays double, so you pay. You not only pay back the item itself, but you pay back kefil, you pay back twice the value on top of the item itself. So if I go to Beit Din and I admit to doing that, then moda b'knas patur. So because I've admitted to it, the penalty payment is I don't receive. So all I have to do is give you back the object, and I don't need to pay the penalty payment. So the Ketzos HaChoshen says that only applies in each Beit Din. So if I do that in one Beit Din, so yeah, that's true. But if you then, as the owner, then go to the Betdin down the road and say, I have witnesses that said this guy stole, then they can make you liable because over there you didn't admit to it. You only admitted to it in this Beit Din. So everyone else disagrees. They said the whole thing doesn't, you know, it's sort of the whole thing falls apart. So I thought it'd be interesting to look in the details and see what, because he has a lot of proofs. He brings a lot of proofs and interesting cases, but I couldn't find it anyway. So we'll try and do that for next, maybe for next time. But either way, as I say, we're dealing now with a case, we haven't got a conclusion. We have this debate when it comes to chatzi nezek, when it comes to half damages. Is it momona or is it kenasa? So we're now going to basically try and bring a few different proofs. Partly proofs and partly also try and just understand our Mishnah, v'hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin, that line. So Tanan, about three quarters of the way down, maybe 12, 15 lines from the end. Tanan, the Mishnah says, hanizak v'hamazik b'tashlumin. So, what does that mean? So we've just suggested that's referring to a nizik v'hamazik b'tashlumin. Means, you know, our suggestion is that this is referring to the case of chatzi nezek, right? Because in a sense they're both taking a loss. Ubishlam olamanda omar palganiska mamona hainu deshayach nizak b'tashlumin. He said, according to the opinion who says Halganiska chatzi nezek is momon, is really you should have paid the full amount, but you're getting a discount. So that's why Hainu Deshayach Nizak Betashlumin. So that's why both of them are taking a hit. Why are both of them taking a hit? Because the Mazik is paying back, is taking a hit by having to pay back half, and the Nizak is taking a hit because he should have received the full payment, and now he's only receiving half the payment. So you get both. So Ella Lamanda Omar, but according to the other opinion, Palga Nizka Knasa, Hashda de lavdi day shokil, right? He says it's not even his, right? B'tashlumin isay. So we should be b'tashlumin isay. He's not really part of the tashlumin. He's not included in the payment. What does that mean? It means that Nizak is taking no hit at all in this case. Why? Because the Nizak's getting extra. He's saying the Nizak would have received nothing. The Nizak, the damaged party, according to that opinion, should have received nothing. The Mazik, the damager, has been given a penalty and is therefore liable for half. But the Nizak is up, basically. The Nizak is up, he's not down. He should have received nothing and now he's getting half. So what do you mean he's not really included in Tashlumin? So the language just doesn't fit. Hanizak wa Mazik but Tashlumin. So we say, no, look, lo nitzrucha Ella lipchas nevela. So if that's, you're right, but what it's referring to, anizik v'amazik tashlumin, the hit that the nizak is taking is pchas nevela, in the amount that the corpse deteriorates, that the value of the corpse deteriorates. What does that mean? So if you have an animal which kills another animal, okay, my ox kills your ox, so the corpse of the dead ox belongs to the Nizak, belongs to the damaged party, it's taken to them, and it belongs to them from early on, and that I think we saw an earlier debate as to at what point exactly do they take ownership of it, but it belongs to them from early on, and that's part of the repayment. And in a sense, yes, that's part of the repayment, but if it loses a small amount of value, then that's going to be a hit that is taken by the Nizak. That's going to be something in which the damaged party loses out on. It's not ideal, but, you know, that's the way these things go. And therefore, this Pachas Nevela is what the Mishnah is referring to. And Nizak Mamazik B'Tashlumin basically saying that, I think the point of Nizak v'Amazik Tashlumin, or the way the Gemara is understanding it, is basically you're both going to end up losing out a little bit, right? The Nizak v'Amazik Tashlumin, there's going to end up being cases where you have a little bit of loss for both of them. Okay, everyone follow that? Yes.
The damaged owner already owned the carcass
anyway. Yes. Why is he losing out?
Yeah,
but I think he's losing out here because the Pchas Nevela is only occurring because the animal's now dead. It wasn't dead before.
Correct.
So that's the point. So because it's dead, he's now losing out. I mean, what's interesting, what I thought you were going to ask, which is what I was going to, which I was not bothered by, but it's interesting, Even according to the opinion Palganiska Knossa, yes, the Nizak should have got nothing in principle, but he also, you know, 5 minutes ago had a live animal and now doesn't have a live animal. So that's a loss. I think what that point is betashlumin, that in the repayment process, I think that's the point. In the repayment process, he's not losing out. So we're saying no, he is losing out in the repayment process because the Pachas Nevela, you now have the, in the repayment, you're receiving the carcass, and that carcass may lose value. So that's where you may lose out as the he does, he gets half, but included in that is the value of the carcass.
So the total value is only half of what the animal was alive.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, you're paying back half of the value from when the animal was alive. I don't think it's plus. I think it's
which doesn't sound like.
Let me just make sure. Im nifchasan nevela ben negich ala amad b'din. Shem shalom amazik. Ela kafi shahoysa. B'nimtza sh'af is achatzin. Yeah, it's definitely, I'm sure it's included in the half payment. Yeah. What was the question? It was...
If you get half plus the carcass, you may not have lost a great deal.
Correct. No, it's half. Yeah, the carcass, I'm pretty sure, is included in the half payment. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
You see, the carcass could be worth more than...
I don't think so. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I mean, certainly the Gemara doesn't seem to assume. I mean, I'm not. It's interesting. It could be nowadays worth more. I think once upon a time animals were much more valuable alive. It's probably true nowadays that in a sense they might be more valuable as meat than they are alive because you don't use them so much. But once upon a time that was a massive use. Yeah, massive use for the animals. So yeah, live animal was an enormous help.
Would there be a distinction between, let's say, your standard ox or whatever and one that was a breeding ox and had value of its own?
Its value is when you say would there be a difference, I mean the value of it is the value of it. So yes, you can have an ox that's worth, I mean, I'm making up the numbers, but you can have an ox that's worth £100 and an ox that's worth £1,000.
Okay, so that would be realized.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Yeah, yeah. Bechas nevela. So the Gemara now asks. So we've said, yeah, the damage that's done is the hit that's taken by the nizak is the loss in value of the carcass of the animal between when he takes ownership of it or when that's included until the ha'amad b'din, until you're actually ready to pay back. If that's what you're talking about, then what about the beginning of the mission? The beginning of the mission said tashlumei nezek melamed shehabaylim metaplim b'nevela. We literally, our Gemara, we've been through this slowly, so this is quite a while ago that we did this. But we talked about the fact that the whole, when we said tashlumei, the Gemara had explained that the phrase tashlumei nezek was teaching us shehabaylim metaplim b'nevela, that the whole point was that they are going to take this hit. So what's the Gemara teaching us? What's the Mishnah teaching us? The Mishnah is not teaching us anything new. We've already learned that earlier on. So we say chada betam v'chada b'muat. So we say one part of the Mishnah is talking about a shor tam, and the other part of the Mishnah is referring to a shor muad utzricha, and we need to teach both of those. You might not have necessarily assumed that it would be the case in both, i.e., that the pachas nevela, the lowering of the value of the carcass is taken by the nizak, by the damaged party. You wouldn't have necessarily made the application to both tam and muat. Why not? If we would have only applied it to a case of tam, mishum de akati lo iayit. You might have thought that in that case, that's only because it has not yet become a muad, i.e., you know, in a sense, already that the the nizak, his taker, is not getting such a great deal over here, right? He's only getting half his animal anyway. Since he's not getting such a great deal, so okay, so he'll take the pchas nevela as well. But in the case of muad, aval muad eimalo, you might have said, no, what do you mean muad? The mazik clearly should have looked after it better, and therefore he's going to end up having to pay the full thing. And we would have said pchas nevela doesn't apply in that case, right? It would have been the mazik, it would have been the damaged party. We might have thought would take the hit for that loss of value. We might have distinguished between the two in that case. Aval muad emalo, as we said, we wouldn't have transferred that halacha over from one to the other. Ve'i ashma'inan muad, and if the Gemara would have, or if the Mishnah would have only applied it to a muad, would have said that the pchas nevela, the lowering of the value, only the lowering of value is that hit is taken by the nizak, is taken by the damaged party. Oh, that's in a case of a muad. We might have thought it was limited to the case of a muad. Why? Mishum de kamashalim kuna, because he's already paying the whole value. Once he's already paying the whole thing, so fine. So he gets a little bit of a break. Because he's paying the whole thing, he gets a little bit of a break. Aval tam ik emalo. Aval tam emalo. But once the mazik is already paying the whole, in a case where the mazik is anyway only paying half, we might have said, no, if you're anyway only paying half, so you can take the pchas nevela. You can take the lowering of the value of the carcass, tzricha, and therefore the Mishnah has to teach both tam and muad in case, as we say, it applies in both cases. The damaged party is going to basically take the hit for that lowering of the value of the animal in both of those cases. Okay. Fine. So now Toshma. So that was just a sort of a side point to try and figure out why we have this extra clause of the Mishnah. Now we're going to try and bring a proof. Try and bring a proof as to whether it's Rav Papa or Rav Huna Bereider of Yeshua, who is correct. Which is the opinion that we're going to follow? Do we follow the opinion Palganiska Mamona? Do we follow the opinion Palganiska Kanasa? When you're paying half damages, is it a penalty payment or is it a regular paying back of what you're liable for? Well, we said Modi Bukanas, if you admit to it.
Oh, okay.
Right? If you admit to it, that's a big difference. Yeah, if you admit to it, then that's going to be a big difference. I think there are other differences as well. But and in terms of, yeah, conceptually, I think it's also significant to appreciate what it is that you're paying back. Okay, Toshma, ma bein tam lemuad. So here we're bring a proof, right? There's a Mishnah later on. I think it's the very next Mishnah, actually. It's over the page almost. Anyway, the Mishnah later on. Yeah, the Mishnah on Tes Zion Amud Beis. So one daf and a half from now, we're going to get to a very short Mishnah, which starts off ma bein tam lemuad and gives us a list of things which are distinctions between tam and muad, right? And do we include in that list palganiska knasa? We don't seem to. So let's just flesh it out in the words of our Gemara. Toshma, we're bringing a proof. Ma bein tam lemuad. The Mishnah says that the following are the distinctions between a tam and a muad. One is shahatam mishalim chatzi nezek migufo umuad mishalim nezek shalim min ha'aliyah. That's two differences, really. Tam pays back half damages and also limits it to the value of the animal migufo shel hashor, but you don't have to pay back over and above that. Umuad mishalim nezek shalim min ha'aliyah, and the muad pays back. Nezek Shalim pays back full damages. Minha Aliyah pays back the full damages. It doesn't matter. There's no limit on the amount that you have to pay back. Ve'im Isa. And if you're talking about, if we have this Palganiska Knasa, if we're following that opinion, then Lesne Nami Ha, we should have taught as follows. We should have said Tam Eina Mishalim Al Pi Atzmo. That if you were to admit to causing that damage, then you wouldn't have had to pay back for a tam. Muad mishalem al piatzma. Right? That's what we said. Moda biknas. If you admit to doing it, the Mishnah should have said that if you admit to doing it, then a tam doesn't pay at all, whereas a muad pays in full. because Palga Niska Knasa, according to this opinion, it would be a penalty payment. Penalty payments are not liable if you admit to them. Excuse me. So the Gemara responds, ah, it's not such a good proof. Ton of a Shia. It wasn't an exhaustive list, right? We've come across this before. It says, your proof is from the fact that the Mishnah left it off the list, so maybe it left other things off the list. Okay, it left lots of things off the list. So the Gemara responds and said, my Shia, the high Shia, and again, this is the line which we've seen before. If the Gemara says, if you're not giving an exhaustive list, then you can't leave only one thing off the list. Okay, there's no such thing as an exhaustive list where you leave only one. If you leave one thing off, then that's clearly an exception. If you leave a few things off, then fine. Then you didn't give an exhaustive list. If you don't, it's a bit like I might have said this last time actually, but I always think of it like thank yous. You know, if you do thank yous and you name people, right? If you just name one or two people and there's lots of people who leave out, then usually okay. You know, you say a couple of people and everyone else, then that's fine. If there's only one person who leave off, then forget it, right? Then it's very clear that was an excluded person. Then you're really stuck, right? So it's no good. So Gemara is saying a similar sort of thing, right? If you're making a list, if you're leaving out only one thing, then clearly that thing shouldn't be included on the list, right? It's an intentional exclusion. If you have a list and there's a few things, then you leave off. Okay, so you just say ton of a shear. You're giving a few. It wasn't an exhaustive list. You're just a couple of suggestions, and the rest are not included. Okay, so we have to find something else. We have to find something else that's also not included on the list. The Mishnah gave us two differences between Tam and Muad. One was half damages and the other was Migufo, that there's a limit to the payment, but it didn't include according to this opinion, Palga Niska Kanasa, right, the fact that it's a penalty payment. According to that opinion, it didn't include that, because penalty payment should have said Tam, if you admit that your animal did damage, you wouldn't have to pay. So they would say, okay, left it off because it wasn't an exhaustive list. So now we have to find something else. What else did it leave off? Shier Chatzi Kofer. It left off half kofer payments. What's half kofer payments? Kofer payments are when the animal kills, right? When the animal kills a person, right? Then you have to pay kofer payment. You have to pay a double payment, right? You don't just pay back the value, but you pay back a double payment as a penalty payment. And what it's saying is chatzi kofer, that you don't have to pay. Imishum chatzi kofer. So I said, what do you mean chatzi kofer? Love shiurahu. That's not leaving off the list. That's included. Homani. That's included. Why is it included? Half penalty payment. Half kofer. Let's say the animal killed. A tam killed a human being. Then you pay only half kofer. That is included in the list. Where is that included in the list? It's the first thing. The mission says you pay back half damages. So if you pay back half damages, that means half damages. It means half of everything. If it was a sure time, it would have paid back the value of the person doubled. And now it only pays back half the value of the person and half the extra, right? Half the penalty payment. So that is included in the Mishnah. That's what it basically ends up. You get half the bill, right? It's like the point is that when they tot it up at the end, they divide it by 50. Divide it by 2, 50%. They divide it by 2. So they do. So that's included in the first half. That's not left out. So homani, the Gemara responds, no, it is left out. It's left out because homani Rabbi Yossi HaGalili says do omer tam mishalem chatzi kofer. That this only works that this only works according to Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. Rabbi Yossi HaGalili says that tam is mishalem chatzi kofer. I think I got this the wrong way around. Imishum chatzi kofer lav shirahu ein. It says it's not left out. Why? Because it's not included in the Mishnah. Sorry. Because that opinion is only... Because that opinion is only Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. Right? Rabbi Yossi HaGalili says, Mishalim Chatzi Kofer. Mishalim Chatzi Kofer, that's what you have to pay back. According to others, what's the disagreement? What's the other opinion? According to the disagrees with Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, the other opinion is that you don't pay back anything. You don't pay back anything. You only pay back half the damages payment. You don't pay back half the penalty payment. Right. You pay back zero of the penalty payment, right? So you effectively end up paying back a quarter, right? In that particular case, you end up paying back a quarter of what the animal of the damage that the animal actually caused. Of what a mu'ad animal would have paid back. You pay back a quarter of what a mu'ad animal would have paid back, and therefore that's the distinction between the two. And as you say, yeah. So basically, we're going to leave that proof aside. Okay. So we had one proof already. I think we'll probably go over this again when we come back. But it's a decent place to stop because we've got to the end of one proof. So we're right at the bottom of Tet Vav Amud Aleph, okay, and I think it would also be good to find out. There's a lot of interesting stuff on Chatzi Nezek, on this Chatzi Nezek issue and Knas versus Mammon, whether it's a penalty payment or a damage payment. And also, actually, David asked a good question. We said before that one of the distinctions might be admitting, but I think there are going to be others as well. So I'll try and find some other ones as well. For next time. Okay.
That would be open to abuse anyway, because you get off the payment in that case by admitting that you caused damage.
Well, you say it's open to abuse, but you don't. Yeah, you mean because. Yeah, Moedib Kanas. Moedib Kanas, you would do. Yeah. But again, it only works if you don't. Firstly, Moedib Kanas for Achrakach Bo'u Edim is no good. Right, if witnesses come along afterwards, it's no good. And again, if it's in a public place and everyone's seen it, then that's already that's not Moedib Kanas. We're not just talking about in a Beis Din. You know, if you have a crash in the middle of a high street, and you say, "Oh, I'm gonna admit to it," you didn't have a choice, right? Obviously, you were going to admit to it. The point is, in a case where you could have got away with it, and you chose to come forward and say it was me, and I'm very sorry. That's the case. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll leave off over there. Just stop the recording, and then we'll figure out next time.